Meantime, except in such extreme cases as this, we have orders not to converse with man, and to make no overtures to any government on earth. Ceased to speak, I floated numbly before those ever-changing screens, watching the pictures as they brought to my vision all that had happened in those days of long ago. Saw, too, much of the probable future, for the future can be predicted fairly accurately for a world or even for a country. Being invaded by the hated Chinese, I saw the rise and fall of an evil political regime which seemed to have a name like communism, but this meant nothing to me. I felt extreme exhaustion, even wilting under the strain which had been placed upon it, hitherto so full of living color, turned gray. My vision blurred and I fell into a state of unconsciousness. A horrid rocking motion awakened me from my sleep, or from the state of unconsciousness. I opened my eyes, but I had no eyes. Although I still could not move, I was in some way aware that I was again in my physical body. The rocking was the table which bore me being carried back along the space vessel corridor. An emotional voice flatly stated, "He is conscious." A note of acknowledgement followed and there was silence again except for the shuffling of feet and the faint scraping of metal as at times my table was bumped against a wall. I lay alone in that metal room. The men had deposited my table and silently withdrawn. The marvels that had befallen me, yet feeling a little resentful. A constant tirade about priests. I was a priest and they were glad enough to make use of my unwilling services. Stood broodingly, I heard the metal panels slide aside, entered and slid shut the door behind him. "Well, monk," exclaimed the voice of the doctor, "you have done well. Be proud of you. While you lay unconscious, we examined again your brain and our instruments tell us that you have all the knowledge locked inside your brain cells. Taught our young men and women much. Be released. Does that make you happy?"
"Happy, sir doctor?" I queried. "What have I to be happy about? You capture me, you cut off the top of my head, you force my spirit out of my body, you insult me as a member of the priesthood, and now, having used me, you are going to discard me like a man casting off his tattered body at death.
Happy? Are you going to restore my eyes? Provide a living for me? How am I going to exist otherwise?" I almost snarled.
"The latter. One of the main troubles of the world, monk," mused the doctor, "is that most of your people are negative."
"Could say that you are negative.
You positively say what you mean. If people would always think positively, there would be no trouble with the world, for the negative condition comes naturally to people here, although it actually takes more effort to be negative."
"But sir doctor, I asked what you were going to do for me. How shall I live? What shall I do? Do I just have to retain this knowledge until someone comes along who says he is the man, and then babble everything like an old woman in the marketplace? And why do you think I will do my alleged tasks, thinking as you do about priests?"
"Monk," said the doctor, "we shall place you in a comfortable cave, with a nice stone floor. It will have a very small trickle of water which will supply your needs in that direction. As for food, your priestly state will ensure that people bring you food. Again, there are priests and priests. Your priests of Tibet are mainly good and we have no quarrel with them. Did you not observe that we have previously used the priests of Tibet? And you ask about him to whom you shall give your knowledge. Remember this, you will know when the person comes. Give your knowledge to him and to none other." So I lay there entirely at their mercy. After many hours the doctor came into my room again, saying, "Now you shall be restored to movement. New robe for you and also a new bowl." Hands were busy by me. My sheet was removed and the new robe, a new one, the first new robe I had ever had, was placed about me. Then movement returned to me. Some male attendant placed an arm around my shoulders and eased me over the edge of the table. In an unknown number of days I again stood upon my feet. Night I rested more content, wrapped in a blanket which also had been given to me, and on the morrow I was taken, as I have already told you, and deposited in the cave where I have lived alone for more than 60 years. Before we rest for the night, let us have a little tea, for my task is at an end. 11. Sat up abruptly, the nape of his neck bristling with fright. Something had brushed by him. I trailed icy fingers across his forehead. For long moments, He sat bolt upright, straining his ears for even the slightest sign of a sound. Wide-eyed and staring, he strove in vain to pierce the utter blackness around him. Moved. No vestige of noise made the slightest ripple on his consciousness. Entrance to the cave was a mere light of blackness vaguely etched on the entire lack of light engulfing the cave. His breath, listening until he could hear the pounding of his own heart, and the faint creakings and wheezes from his own organs. Rustle of sound from wind-disturbed leaves cheered him. The night called. The absolute lack of noise which is known to but few, and to none in populated communities. Again light tendrils wandered across his head. Of fright, he leapt high into the air, his legs running even before he hit the ground. Dashing out of the cave, perspiring with fright, he stooped hastily over the well-banked fire. Side the enclosing earth and sand he uncovered the red glow. Stung a well-dried branch and blew on the embers until it seemed his blood vessels must burst under the strain. As the wood burst into flame. It in one hand he hastily inserted another stick and waited for it too to flare into light. Burning brand in each hand he slowly re-entered the cave. Leapt and danced to his movements. His shadows were thrown grotesque and huge on either side of him. Nervously he peered about, anxiously he searched in the, but it had been a spider's web trailing across him, but of that there was no sign. Then he thought of the old hermit and he berated himself for not thinking of him before. He called tremulously, "Are you all right?" Straining ears he listened, but there was no reply, not even an echo. Dubiously he made his slow, frightened way forward, with the two flaring branches thrust well before him. At the end of the cave he turned right, where he had not before entered, and uttered a pent-up gasp of relief as he saw the old man sitting in the lotus position at the far end of a smaller cave. Flash, flash, flash caught his attention as he was about to silently withdraw. Staring hard he saw that water was emerging from a rocky protrusion as drop, drop, drop. Now the young monk was calmer. "Sorry I intruded, venerable one," he said. "I feared you were ill. I will leave you." There was no reply, no movement. The old man sat as still as a stone statue, and then stood for a moment studying the motionless figure. Fearfully, he extended his arm and touched the old one on the shoulder. The spirit had withdrawn. Previously bedazzled by the flickering flames he had not thought about the aura. Now he perceived that too had faded. Gone out, cross-legged in front of the corpse and recited the age-old ritual for the dead, giving instructions for the journeyings of the spirit on the way to the heavenly fields. Warning of possible dangers laid before him in his confused state of mind by mischievous entities, his religious obligations fulfilled, he slowly rose to his feet, bowed to the dead figure, and, the torches having long burned out, felt his way out of the cave. The pre-dawn wind was just rising and began moaning eerily through the trees. A wild keening came from a rocky fissure across which the wind was blowing and making a high organ note of dismal sound. Slowly the first faint streaks of light appeared in the morning sky and the far edge of the mountain range could now be distinguished. Crouched miserably beside the fire, wondering what to do next, thinking of the grisly task before him, time seemed to stand still. But at last, after what seemed to be an infinity of ages, the sun advanced and there was daylight. The young monk thrust a branch into the fire and waited patiently until the end burst into flames. Then, reluctantly he grasped the flaming brand and advanced with trembling legs into the cave and into the inner chamber. The body of the old hermit was sitting as though he were still alive. Monk bent and lifted the old body. Without much effort he raised it and draped it across his shoulders. Staggering a little he made his way out of the cave and along the side of the mountain where the big flat stone was waiting. The vultures were waiting too. Man removed the robe from the wasted body and felt instant compassion at the sight of the skeleton thin frame with the skin so tightly stretched. Revulsion he jabbed a sharp-edged flint into the lower abdomen and pulled up hard. Gristle and fibrous muscle made a dreadful sound which alerted the vultures and brought them hopping nearer. With the body exposed and the body cavity gaping open, the young man raised a heavy rock and brought it down upon the skull so that the brains came tumbling out. Streaming down his cheeks, he picked up the old hermit's robe and bowl and trudged back to the cave, leaving the vultures quarreling and fighting behind him. Into the fire he tossed the robe and bowl, watching as the flames so quickly consumed them. with tears plopping down to the thirsty earth, he turned away and trudged slowly down the path towards another phase of life.